This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 90 Day Fiancé Wrap Up Podcast. We're here today to talk about Season 7, Episode 9 of Happily Ever After? I am, of course, your host and conductor of the Hot Mess Express, Puya Zambakili, ready to break down another week of 90 Day Fiancé. And I am not on my own. I've got a special guest here for you today. This is their second time reporting back to talk about this season. They are one half of the Love Island Wrap Up right here on this network, and also one half of the challenge coverage over on the Dom and Colin podcast. It is, of course, your favorite of mine, the king of Twitter, Brian Scally. Scally, how are you doing today?
Oh, Puya, hello, hello. I'm doing very well. I am very excited to be here to talk about these couples at this moment in time, because I feel like most of them have never been closer to breaking up. And that is so exciting for me, the prospect that we're on. I would love to live in this moment and not come to the reality that any of them stay together.
The good old midpoint of a 90-day season where everything looks like it's going bad for them, but it's good because they'll be separated. And then, you know, 2 weeks from now, it gets sad. But for right now, it's good. Also, I appreciate the $30 you PayPal'd me for calling you the king of Twitter. Really do appreciate that. Pleasure doing business with you. I got you.
Oh, yeah. No problem. I really appreciate it. Obviously, had to come on and make my presence known.
Well, and your presence shall be known, because we have lots to talk about here. So we're going to kick it off with a couple that have had high highs and low lows this season. And I feel like I miss when they were at their high high because they were just honeymooning and having a good vibe. But it is time to talk about Jenny and Sumeet. So honeymoon is over. We kind of saw them revert back to the old problems they had before the honeymoon, namely Sumeet's parents and how they don't approve, and how Sumeet really wants them to approve, so much so that he has planned to go visit his family. Scally, how's it been watching them these past couple weeks? Because I don't exactly remember what you saw last when you were on the pod, but I want to know what your feelings have been.
So I had them right before they went on their little honeymoon.
Oh, great. You missed all the good bits.
What an adventure it's been. But I don't know. I feel like I was at a point where Jenny and Sumeet, where they were doing well. There were definitely problems surrounding them, but they themselves, I thought, seemed pretty good, especially after then. I had not been here and on their honeymoon, but now I think the honeymoon is over, both location wise and, you know, metaphorically. Things are starting to take a downturn as soon as they get back in this apartment.
Yeah, because again, it feels like Sumeet had all his focus and all his attention, all his time put on Jenny. And when he does that, you are in a position where you are culminating a very loving relationship. Now, the problems arise because he is back home and he clearly wants to reconcile with his family, which is not a problem that he wants to reconcile with them. It's a problem with regards to the relationship because Jenny is over it. Jenny has the mindset of, if they don't approve at this point, what can you do to change it? Because I don't think there's a chance that that can happen. And I don't want to be in this environment where I'm surrounded by people who do not like me and also do not approve. And I have no support system myself. And my one person, my husband, is so distracted with appeasing his family that he is not looking after me at all. So where do I fall in your plans here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly the problem is, I understand that he wants to get these relationships back on track. Let's fix everything. But as much effort as he's putting in here, he's not putting in basically any with Jenny in these moments with his family. And I don't blame her for not wanting to go back. I mean, the last time she had met with his family, it did not go well. And Sumit basically ignored her and ran off regardless of how she was feeling. So Jenny sitting this one out, I think, makes complete sense.
Yeah. So Jenny was asked, would you like to come with me? Which is something that initially last time Sumit did not offer up. And then when he did, Jenny was not allowed to speak pretty much. So Jenny makes the healthy decision to not go. No, I will not be joining you. That's not going to work out for me. So we immediately go into Sumit going to see his family. And the predictions last week, Jason had called out that he doesn't think the parents are going to be there. Parents were indeed not there. In their stead was Sumit's brother, Sumit's sister-in-law, and Sumit's aunt made an appearance. I don't recall if it's a debut on the show or not, but it, what got interesting here is that we got the greatest hits, right? Yeah, he's there, smiles. How are the parents? Are they coming? Are they going to be here soon? No, they're not coming, says his brother. And then also his aunt immediately starts filling him in on what's happened, that his mom is in distress. His mom either looks drunk or high all the time because of all the crying she's doing, and that the phones have been ringing like crazy since they found out that since people found out that Jenny and Sumit are married, or sorry, Sumit is married rather. And the big problem is this age difference and that he cannot have kids and that that is not doing them any good. While all this is being told to him, Sumit's kind of quiet, just taking it all in. He's not really speaking at all. And then his aunt does utter the words, only you can fix this. You can fix it. And I think we all know what she means by that. Get a divorce. And he's like, well, I got married. You should accept it. Which, wow, Sumit grew a backbone and actually said that without imploding. I was very surprised. But what happened next shocked me. So he tells his family, because they had said, you know, you can't have kids and there's a big age difference and these are issues. He heard it as, I guess I can't fix the age difference, but if I have a kid, that could change things. So he tells them that he would have kids in the future. But then when pushed to, you know, does Jenny know about that? Have you talked about this? He's like, no, I'm really disgusted with Jenny. Sir, what are you doing?
I was beside myself. Like the idea of Jenny and Sumit raising a child. I don't need it. Really? No, just please. Like, no one give them a child, please. I enjoy Jenny. I think that I was enjoying them as a couple for a little bit here. But the fact that Sumit was even surprised that his parents didn't show up, I feel like says a lot about Sumit as a person in general. Like the last time that he did see them, his mom was like, to me, to you, I am dead now. Do not speak to me. Like it's never happening again. And so to expect them to have shown up, I think, was already naive enough, and to then put this man in charge of a life, especially with a unwilling participant in Jenny, I think is extremely concerning.
Oh, not only that, but also the fact that I don't think he only wants to have kids to appease his parents. He has had no interest in having kids, and he made that very clear
multiple times. Like, I actively do not want this child. So, I mean, I can't imagine there's a world in which they end up actually raising children together. I don't see that happening. But if they do, like, that footage is still there forever. I don't want this child at all. I actively dislike this child, but I want to speak to my parents. So I guess I will tolerate this child living in my house.
And I mean, the fact of the matter is, you have made it clear you don't want children. This is, I'm assuming, something Jenny knows as well. And you can't have a child with Jenny. So how would you adopt? Would you be looking for a surrogate? Again, I'm asking these questions because these are questions you should be talking to Jenny with, because Jenny doesn't know that this is something that you're suddenly throwing out there that you're interested in. I feel like he's kind of just trying to throw anything he can on the wall to see what sticks, because if he is able to say the right set of words in a sentence, the family might be like, oh, so I guess we could fix this. Actually, you know what? That would work really well. No, that's still, he doesn't get that either. So anyway, he leaves to go back home from this meeting, and he says that he's kind of wants to avoid telling Jenny because it didn't go how he expected, and he doesn't want her to, you know, feel even more annoyed because things are already bad. Well, guess what? He tells her, and Jenny's like, well, doesn't sound like anything's going to get fixed here. Anyway, how about we go to America now? Because I'm not getting treated well here. My family would never do what your family's doing to us, and they would support us. And hey, I sacrificed my life and moved to your country. It's maybe you can leave your country and come experience my country now. How about it's time for you to sacrifice here? And obviously, he has no interest. He makes it very clear that he wouldn't. He thinks that it'll make the situation worse. He thinks that leaving would essentially close the door on that relationship and that there would be no salvaging it. To that, which I say, I don't think this relationship is going to be salvageable unless you get rid of Jenny, which you're clearly not wanting to do. So staying here, I would argue, is even worse, because you're here and they don't want to see you. You're here and they're getting phone calls. You're here and you're serving as a constant reminder that they didn't get what they wanted. And if you leave, maybe, just maybe, the absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? Because when you're a doorstep away, which obviously I don't know how far they live away from each other, but you're in the same city, right? You're accessible, and that they're like, oh, we can talk to them whenever, we just don't want to. If you're gone, that might be a wake-up call of, you know, we don't want to lose our son, and now we don't know when we're going to see him next. That could help. Now, I'm not saying move for that reason, because all of this is ridiculous to consider that way, but I don't like that he's just shutting this down point blank. What do you think?
It's hard, because I think you see in even some of the other storylines here, like, let's say they do take that step and actually go through and move. Like, let's look at Yara. She was not able to go home for a number of years at that point. And
yeah,
granted, like, obviously COVID had considerations in that in terms of processing timing. But Simi goes ahead and moves to America. Like, I understand that, like, yeah, distance may actually make them wake up, but guess what? He can't really, like, go home for at least a number of months after the process.
Oh, at least a year to 2 years.
That's sure. What I expected. So that's the thing, is I think that's going to basically stamp out any chance there is. Not that I really think that there really is a
I don't think there was any chance that the move was going to happen ever.
That's the thing, is I think the reconciliation would probably take a few years at the least anyway at this point. So maybe go ahead, but I don't think Samita is willing to wait a couple years. And by moving to America, he's guaranteeing that. And as we've seen, he's not willing to give up hope on this at all, to the point where he's willing to raise a child that he does not want. So I think he's very desperate to stay here and rekindle the relationship. And I don't think that 2 years without his parents guaranteed is anything that he's willing to be signing up for.
Right. I think that what we're seeing from this couple, we're seeing the growing pains of not having these important conversations before the marriage. We have clearly been following Jenny and Simi's story very closely, pretty much from a long time ago. We saw the entire journey between she found out that he was married already. We saw him get the divorce. We saw her push to get the marriage done. But what they failed to do in that timeline is make it clear what their expectations are and what they would like in the future. Because I would argue that we have never heard Jenny really talk about wanting to move to the U.S. This is brand new. in the next time on, we do see Sumeet bringing up again that his friend is looking for someone to work with him 7 days a week. We have never seen Sumeet show interest in working again seven times a week. So we've never seen Sumeet mention that he doesn't want to live a quote retired lifestyle, a retirement lifestyle like Jenny does. So these are things that I don't think they had fully thought about. And I think now that conditions have changed, they both want different things, which is not great, because if you want to have your parents' love, you have to get rid of Jenny. If Jenny wants to be in a positive environment, she has to get rid of Sumeet. If Sumeet wants to live the non-retirement style living, Jenny's not about that. So where does that leave you two at this point? Because it sounds like you two love each other, which is very evident. But the love is being impacted by these other desires you both now possess that neither is willing to budge on. So where do we go?
I feel like, though, in some regards, it's even worse. Like, obviously, we're not privy to every conversation.
Right.
But as we see here, Sumeet even says, like, me and Jenny have talked about how we both don't want children. Like, that has been a conversation on the table. So have they ever talked about moving to America? Have they ever talked about, like, what Sumeet's job and, like, work life will be ever? Maybe. I don't know. But even if they have, it doesn't seem like any of that really holds any water in the long term. So, like, good luck having any serious conversations and commitments, because seems like those are back on the table for discussion.
Right. And at this point, at this stage, I feel like Sumeet clearly was willing to have something that he did not want just to get the approval of his parents back. That is not the reason you should be getting in the business of raising a family. So Jenny wants to just, you know, chill with her husband. That will not be the case if you have a whole baby in the plans now. The India is not going to work out. It's so much. And, you know, I just talked about the next time on with them. It's she has when he brings up the whole 7 days a week, she mentions that, well, you better not be. Are you going to go work? Or are you going to go hang out with your friends? Is that what's happening? Or I better not smell beer when you come home. I'm going to find out you were drinking. So there's a level of. And I feel like, again, Jenny is in a whole other country with no social circle of her own, with no community of her own, with no, like, you know, no side hobbies, nothing. So obviously she's like, I don't want you to spend time without me because I want to have fun too. Like, I want to have fun with you. So again, none of this screams good for me. This is not great. And it's sad to talk about them like this because, again, literally 2-3 weeks ago when they were at the honeymoon, I genuinely thought they were going into a good place. I genuinely thought that the best was left ahead of them. And now I feel like they just left the best at the honeymoon and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Because let's put these two ideas Sumeet now has together. I'm adopting a child and I don't want it. And I'm going to go back to work 7 days a week. So thank you for raising this child, Jenny, now that I'm not going to be raising, because I'm going to be at work and I'm gone. Like, I'm staying there. I'm sleeping over. That's been on the table too. Yeah. So good luck with this child, Jenny. Bye.
And if I'm Jenny, the way I see it is exactly what you put out. In addition to, oh, great. There's one other thing that I know I'm going to get criticized on because I'm not doing this right. I'm not raising the baby right. I'm not doing this part correctly. No thanks. I don't want any part of that at all. Also, I feel like, you know, even if, right, Sumeet's parents want grandchildren, and that's one of the big things, I don't think they want grandchildren with Jenny as like the parent, right? They want Sumeet to marry someone a little bit similar to Usman's story, where they want someone from their community, perhaps, or just at least the same age as Sumeet to be there. So that doesn't fix anything for Jenny. At best, it does. We have a grandchild now. That's all it does. And I don't think that's going to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I can see him having the twisted logic of like, well, they won't stay away from their grandchild also, right? But like,
God,
maybe they will. So I don't know. I am very nervous for this storyline.
Yeah. And then what happens then? They stay away from their grandchild. Now, are you going to resent this baby because the baby didn't bring you closer to? No, I don't even want to explore that. Again, I feel like nothing is good here. It's ridiculous. Sumit is not thinking straight. But also, I feel for him in that if your family is very important to you and you've kind of completely been pushed to the side, I can only imagine how difficult that is going to be to struggle with. But logically, you got to think about the person you married here as well and take that into consideration, which I really think he's not doing. So we'll see what happens next week when the conversation about the job happens. While that's happening, let's move over to another couple that kind of are in a similar boat in a way, just pre-marriage, and that is Kim and Usman. So last week, we saw Kim and Usman go to his mom's place to try and get mom's blessing. Kim did buy them a cow to, you know, gift as a sign of goodwill. The family kind of saw more of a as more of a bribe. We didn't see the payoff of what happens after that conversation. Scally, they threw us right into the conversation here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have Kim begging to be allowed to speak and like tell her side of the story as she's being accused of trying to bribe this family. And oh my God, was this awkward? Like, I just don't know what Kim really even could have said to make this remotely better. I feel like she seemed to be doing an okay job and people like listened and like nodded their heads and were like, okay, also, but now like get out. Like there was no salvaging this. I think as soon as like as we see where Usman thought like, oh, this will be a good gesture, and it is immediately flipped into they're trying to bribe us. I think there was no winning.
No. And I think that even more clear than before, one thing that she does have right is that, yes, she is getting compared directly to the ex, right? Directly. The ex ended up bringing brought a sheep or a goat was mentioned. So The parallels are there. Unfortunately or not, the parallels are there. So, of course, you know, Usman's bringing a older woman from America over again for approval. They did not have a positive experience with the previous one, so they're going to be looking at this sideways a little bit at the very least. But then Kim gets very defensive about the bribe part. I feel like, and you know, this is me talking about a couple as if it's not a real life thing that's happening, but more of a, from a TV side of things. I'm like, Kim, maybe you shouldn't have gotten into defense mode and been like, how dare you say that? I would never do that. And more so focused on, you know, I care about this man. I initially was not approved of. I was the potential. But even if she did all that, I don't think their minds were going to change. I think Usman's mom made herself very clear the day before when it was one-on-one, my answer is no, and it's going to stay no. And that was never going to change it here. But then what happened was she brings up, you know, I'm willing to let him have a second wife. And that's hard for me. That's hard. That's not in my culture at all. And that's something I've considered. And then this gets translated to his mom. And the mom says, well, he should probably start by marrying the, quote, younger one first, right? Someone from our community, someone who he can have children with. Then maybe that happens. Maybe the second marriage potentially, which is a bit of a compromise. Didn't even think we were going to get that. Sounds like a bit of a compromise here. And we also get a confessional from his mom where she talks about how, you know, I feel like people here are going to be thinking my son is mixing with Americans and not really like staying true to his own, which is obviously happening because, again, look at the last two people. So the mom ends it with saying, yeah, kindly apologize to telling her other son this. Kindly apologize to her and ask her to leave my house. Goodbye. You're dismissed.
The thing is, I thought Kim even was doing a decent job of like, yeah, she got a little defensive, but like, whatever. I kind of brushed that off. She did say like, look, like, I know I'm not perfect. She got emotional. She said like, but we really care about each other and we make each other happy. And like, that's what's important, like, et cetera, et cetera. I thought it was a decent pitch. I was surprised to hear the like, marry someone else first and then maybe we can revisit this, which I don't even know if that was explicitly said, because I'm kind of wondering, I think even if he marries someone else first, this is never getting approved anyway.
No, I don't think it's like, oh, aren't you happy you have a you have a child, you have a wife here. Why would you need another? Why would you want, you know, I think that's the angle that would go and happen there. I would even argue that, yes, Kim's argument or not argument, Kim's response wasn't bad, right? And if anything, she was hitting all the right points. But I would argue that it would have come a lot better if it came from Usman, because he is the one that needs to prove and show that he cares a lot. And I feel like he kind of took the back seat here.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's been kind of a pattern. Like, he's gone to bat a little bit more than I even would say I would think he would generally. Like, when I saw like Usman praying that like things would work out and like, please just let this be simple and let Bippy accept it, I was like, oh, maybe he's like actually more into this than I thought. Just, there's been suspicions, like with this being a second 90 Day Fiance appearance, definitely I think people are always going to ask those questions. And so to see him take it like a little more seriously, I thought was an improvement and reassuring as far as like his level of investment in this relationship. But yeah, I think there's definitely, you know, he's not going full Sumit, but not standing up to the family quite as much as he could be here.
Right. And that's the thing. I try and watch this show by not thinking about, is this staged? Is this staged? And I feel like that comes up right in conversation. I get comments about it. Some people will write on the review that like, hey, that was clearly this or that. But I try and watch it as if everything is done authentically, even if all of that, the praying, the worry, all of the things he's saying are true. I feel like he needs to put like 1500 times the amount of passion / argument / defense up when his family's shooting it down, if he really wants it to happen, right? Because clearly they're facing an uphill battle with this and it's not getting any better. So anyway, they get brushed off. They get told to leave and, you know, he feels bad about it. He never expected it to be this hard. It is. But then in the car ride back, Usman is very, very strangely being positive. He thinks it'll work out. And then he whispers to Kim, you can have double yammy tonight. Sir, I don't think that's what she was looking for here. I think she wants the approval. She wants this to proceed. I don't think yammy is just going to sort this stuff out. And ultimately, he talks to her about it and he says, listen, I think the thing I'm realizing is that I can't deny her the ultimatum of marrying someone else first. And she's like, well, then we're broken up because I'm not going to be down with that. And here's where this is a very complicated matter. So personally, it's polygamy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not a polygamist. So I wouldn't be okay with like a second spouse for my spouse, or I wouldn't want to have a second spouse myself. Now, if you have agreed to let your partner have a second spouse, I don't think there is a ranking, right? I don't think that, you know, the second person you marry is the second wife, or as in like the second priority. I don't think that's how it is. And I don't think that's how it's seen or should be seen. But Kim clearly sees it this way. And she, even in her verbiage, she was like, I know my worth. And I've always said, I don't want to put myself, don't want to let anyone put me second. And I refuse to be put second. And I want to be the first wife. Like, that is my deal breaker. So at this point in the conversation, I think it's abundantly clear to me, then you're broken up. Right? There's no fixing this. That's never going to be the case, because similar to the Sumit story, there's an ultimatum that's available, but that ultimatum is something you don't want. And it's something that you probably won't be able to get removed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot here. Basically, I have a couple questions where, first, I don't know what is it like a humiliation kink that Usman has that he's horned up in the back of this Uber now coming home? But like, I don't know if this was like the mood setter that it seemed to be, but okay.
Double yammy.
And then I do wonder if there would be any implications for, so Kim is very set on being the first wife. Let's say Usman was married, not in America, but elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And then Kim wanted to then marry Usman and actually go through with the 90-day process to have him live in America. Would mm-hmm. there be any conflict of interest or like potential issue with actually having his visa approved if it was revealed that he was married elsewhere?
You know, that's entirely possible. I would, on just instinct, assume yes, but that wouldn't be by any backing or full knowledge. Yeah. So if any of our listeners are either well-versed or have you've done the research because, you know, you were curious, please let us know on Twitter. Appleism at @Brian_Scally would be appreciated. I'm not sure is the correct answer here.
I feel like that is a... argument that was not really explored openly, at least on the show, because I feel like it probably would be her strongest and like the reason why she would be like the most opposed. It seems much more to be about an ego thing as far mm-hmm. as it is that, presented on the show.
Yeah.
So I don't know if maybe that's also in her mind, but she's not saying it. But that was where my first thought was of like, okay, I don't think this is the worst compromise in the world on paper. Mm-hmm. If we are already accepting the situation where he will have another wife, but if Kim has no interest in moving out of the US, it seems. So I think that that's probably going to be a major concern of, okay, I thought you were living with me in the US and now all of a sudden that's not happening. That seems pretty major. More than being first or second.
Well, that, and then I feel like we've seen her talk about the quote second wife. Anytime she's talked about the second wife, she's treating it as if the second wife is a surrogate for him to have children and that they should have no connect. She should be the priority. The other family is not allowed to live in the States. They're not allowed to be on the same continent. Almost. They have to be on their own thing in their own place. So if she's looking at it like that, and then she is being told, what if you were second wife? I think that's how she pictures it, which is, so his primary life is here, and I am like the person on the side in the States, which mm-hmm. she doesn't want. Now, obviously, I don't think that's the correct way to look at it, but that does raise some questions for me as far as, well, obviously, if he was to have a child, I don't know how much he's going to split his time / how / where would he live primarily. So those are also questions. I love what you brought up about that hindering the K-1 visa or any visa for him to move. Mm-hmm. I know that the show loves to not talk about the technical side of things. And I feel like the only time we're really seeing that being mentioned is in the Elizabeth and Andre storyline. And that's simply because the whole lawyer visit, the interview and stuff, that's really well nicely being tucked into the beef with the family. But that makes the most sense to me, which is that should be the argument. And if that's the argument, what's Usman going to say to that? Because if Usman says, we can live here, she'd be like, no, I'm good. And then it's over. So why is that not being brought up?
Yeah, pretty cut and dry. I do also like the argument, though, of like, Kim has spent weeks, if not months, just like basically shit talking the position of second wife. Yeah. And like, yeah, that second wife, that sucks for her. Now what all a of downgrade. A sudden, yeah, like that would be embarrassing. I would never do that. Now it's like, oh no, that's you now. You're the second wife. So like almost more so just like convinced herself that, oh, it's okay because I'll be the first wife and the second wife. That sucks. No one wants to be that. And then the realization that no, she will be that. And whether it is true or not that there is any balance of power that may be off in her mind, I think that she has already convinced herself that that would be the case.
Right. And I feel like, you know, again, Kim is someone who only ever has considered this for Usman. Like, she very clear from the minute we met her, she talked about how she'd let him have a second wife. But also, I feel like to her being the first wife is her giving permission for him to take a second. Whereas if she's the second, that power is taken away from her. I feel like that's how she sees it, right? So that obviously is a no-no. Anyway, so all of this to say, they end up going to the next scene, we see Usman talking about in confessional how he wants to call his mom and push again, and that if she agrees to see him, then there's a chance. But if she doesn't, he thinks that he can get Kim to accept. Good luck, buddy, because that's not going to happen. So that is a pipe dream and a half if I've ever seen one. So then they're outside. They're having this, like, they're at, I want to say, like, an outdoor coffee shop potentially. And Usman is getting a local pedicure while this is happening. So that kind of felt like it was just thrown in there. I don't know why that needed to be a part of the plot. But she says, at the topic of the second wife thing, I'm not going to be your second wife. That's simply not going to happen. And then this is where I feel like Usman is talking out of his back, where he says that he's compromised more than she is compromised, and that he is not giving up on this, and he feels like she is considering giving up by just not even playing into, you know, talking through the scenario of being the second wife.
Yeah. When we first started with Usman getting a pedicure at the patio table, I was like, oh, is this the scene that gets cut out on Discovery Plus? That's like what it was going to be.
Well, but it might be, but what I've been doing now is that depending on my guest, because I roughly now know who's watching on Discovery Plus, I'll watch the other version so that I don't miss out on a scene. I'm willing to bet that this was the scene that got cut, like the early part of this scene.
Yeah, the early part, maybe, because it's tough. I don't think you can cut the end where he basically says he's the one fighting here. And I think that that is kind of true, where it seems like Kim has kind of become resigned to, like, well, it's over. And I think she's doing that because Usman told her, if this happens, it's over. So it seems like she's like taking his cues, but he's not willing to say it's over. He is going to fight for this. And Kim was taking like his first word for the situation. And then he pretty quickly turns that around to like, well, you should just be thankful because I'm the one who could have many beautiful women around me. And obviously she does not take well to that. I feel like we've seen this before.
It's rude. It's rude and it's messed up. I do not, first of all, if you have to talk about it, I don't think it's happening. You know what I mean? If you're bragging about this, I don't think it's real. I just, that's how I feel. But second of all, you can't at any moment of pushback throw this in your partner's face as if it's nothing, as if it's something that's fact or fiction. I don't care. You don't do this. This is a huge problem that you're doing this. And having that attitude, then you cannot argue that you are not giving up and she's considering giving up when you're like, well, I have this DM full of women that would be willing to be with me and I've chosen to be with you. Also, the way he said it did imply that she's ugly, which I've completely understood why she got up and left. I will say, no drink in sight for her to throw in his face, but it would have been warranted. It would have been warranted, just saying. But basically she goes away, she's crying, she's like, I'm not meeting his family, we're not doing this today, it's not happening. Is now the question I have for you, Scally, is this: predictions, because neither of us have looked into spoiler territory here. Do you think they're gonna end up being together still after this, sight unseen?
I feel like they're together, not engaged.
Do you think they're kind of where they are right now?
Yeah, I think that we have not really moved the needle forward. You know, still serious, but figuring out the logistics of this relationship.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you there. I simply do not see how they get this to work. Now, I'm going to look at the next time on here real quick. They're just fighting more. And then there is a line from, there is a line from Kim that says, I will never let a man manipulate me again. So we'll see where that ends up landing us. But I agree with you in that I feel like we're going to end the season and they are going to be at the tell-all and it's still going to be the same situation of, yeah, we're together, but, you know, we're not. Nothing's happened. Nothing's changed. So,
yeah, it's tough. I feel like we could even end up like on a 90-day fiancé season of like Usman's coming to the US, like him knowing full well like we're not going through with this because my mom is not approved yet. So I don't know. I think it's tough. I feel like almost even a few of these couples where what are we going to see Jenny and Samit going through the same? But I don't know. I think it's a tough spot to really see them moving forward in any significant way by the end of the season.
Yeah, I feel like, especially, you know, talking about these two couples back to back, I feel like Kim and Usman, I mean, I was shocked when I saw them on the list for this season because I thought, what do you have to give us? And then now I feel like they're essentially kind of the B-tier story of Jenny and Sumit. It's the same story, just said differently in a different continent. So I don't know what their longevity is on this franchise. I don't know if they're going to be brought back again. But, the argument could be made there that if they're still together, there's enough of a, ooh, what's going to happen next that could still keep them on our TV screens for another season of one of the franchises, which I'm over it. I'm done.
If they were not together in some world, I could really see Kim on A Single Life.
I think that will 100% happen.
Yeah, like living her best life, really feeling herself. New single Kim is out. I could really see it. And I just don't see Usman staying away from this franchise, regardless of how he ends up back here. I feel like we're not getting rid of either of them by any means.
Isn't that unfortunate? And with that somber news, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Big Ed and Liz.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so here is the update on Big Ed and Liz. So I thought about it over the week about, you know, the whole, I mentioned if I see them on another season, I'm not going to talk about them. And then it just got uglier on this episode. So I think I found a healthy middle where we're not going to spend too much time on them. We're not going to fine tooth comb it. We're not going to analyze. They shouldn't be together. They shouldn't. It's a very toxic confrontation, toxic fight. And it is, quite frankly, uncomfortable. So I won't put you through the details here. We'll try and get through it as quickly as possible. Just give you the update now that we're all invested on the show. And we'll go from there. So Liz ends up leaving Big Ed's place, goes to find the ring that she dropped out in some neighbor, like not neighbor, but like some person's front yard. Finds the ring, says, I'm going to give it back to him. And that's it. I'm going to call it quits. Her friend Tawny does show up to embrace her. And then the next scene, she's back at his house. She's given the ring back. And then there's a lot of back and forth arguments. He talks about how she threw the ring and that hurt him more than anything she could have said or said. He's like, well, now we're both sober. We should talk about it. But she's even more angry now. And then there were some accusations thrown back and forth about you said things that hurt me. No, you said this first. No, you said this first. You're the party animal. We know who the party animal is. And the biggest whole argument, Scally, about the woman at the party is that that is someone toxic that I wanted you to remove from your life, but you invited them to the engagement party.
I hate Big Ed so much.
I am shocked to find this out.
It is so frustrating watching him. I just like, the moment you see them, I couldn't believe they were together. And just like watching it episode by episode only solidifies that every minute that passes by. I just can't believe that Liz is here. Like, why? What possibly could have happened at any moment in any day to have like kept this going for any amount of time? I don't get it. I'm very confused. I feel like it seems like we're at a point of no return. I know. I feel like that's probably also optimistic thinking, where he's like screaming at her being like, just tell me if you're a lesbian, like also just like completely erasing the possibility of Liz being bisexual, like on top of things. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, okay, sure. We're just like jumping. Yeah. Whatever. I don't know. It's just like nothing this man could do would surprise me at this point anymore. I don't know why she puts up with like 1 second of him, let alone like the constant like lashings we're seeing in this episode.
Yeah, it's like a combination of he's super insecure, But then he projects those insecurities onto her. He gaslights her on, you know, what she thinks and feels. No, you feel this way. No, you said you would date a woman. No, you did this, blah, blah, blah. And then triples down, isn't willing to lay his sword down and just try and fix things. But instead, I want to fix things. Oh, you're still mad? Then I can be mad as well. I'm also mad and I'm going to hurl some stuff at you for no reason. So that's happening with that, with him. On the other side, go ahead.
When she was like, I'm going to my friend's house, I was like, I just wish it was that friend because anything to make him more insecure and hurt more, I was down for. And not that I needed her to, you know, receive the accusations from that point out when it was revealed it was that friend, but I just wanted so badly for him to like stress even more than he was.
And I just simply cannot. Like, I would have not been in that house at all. I would have not. No way. There's no world. So, and again, no world. And then if I'm being treated like that right as I wake up, goodbye. That is not happening. When I wake up, I want a cup of coffee and I want to do my own thing. Do not bother me. Especially if we had a long fight like that the night before. Mm-hmm. Next time on, Big Ed tells Liz, I'm sorry, but I don't trust you. Big Ed, no one cares. Quite frankly, I'm just sorry that I have to see you on the show.
Mm-hmm. Like that bush that you found the ring in, just sleep there. It's a better spot. Like, just stay. It's fine. I don't know. I feel like, again, I don't see any world in which they're still together, but I didn't see any world in which they got together in the first place. So here we are.
See, I'm more skeptical. I feel like they're still together. I feel like they're going to be on another season. And when I tell you that I will pretend they're not on that season. Like if someone's listening to podcasts only, they will not know that Big Ed's on that season. I will not be talking about him. And hey, trust me, audience, the listeners only, listener exclusive, I'm doing you a favor. Because when we retell them here, they are significantly nicer than what we see on the screen. It is very difficult to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nonstop. It's so frustrating to watch.
Yeah. So let's just pivot over to Bilal and Shaida, who had one of their best episodes of the season, I would argue. And I say that
a low bar.
Exactly. Not a lot needed to happen, and not a lot happened, which is what made it a good episode. So we are on the first day of Ramadan here. So Ramadan is the holy month of Ramadan in Islam. Is the month where you get closer to God. Everyone's fasting. You're pretty much closer to your religion than you are typically. And that's a very simplistic way for me to explain it to anyone that did not know what Ramadan is. So it's the first day of Ramadan, and it's important to note that because not only are they going to be fasting, but also apparently Bilal has, you know, in an effort to have them be closer to their religion, there's been forbidden topics put on the table, one of them being talking about the baby. And the baby situation, which is wild considering that a week ago is when they got their test results.
Guess what? Can't talk about it now. I don't know. I mean, I know probably like, yeah, you want to avoid stress at this time. But it seems like a pretty pressing conversation, and it doesn't seem like both parties are in agreement that this should be put on hold. So definitely frustrating to see that this conversation, which has been overdue for quite some time now, is being pushed even further.
What's surprising that it's still like you can still hit the snooze button on this topic after you've gotten the results that they got, which basically said that by 40, Shaida's chances of getting pregnant fall down to like 5%. That is a huge conversation to have. Yet they're not having it right now. It is the first day of Ramadan. We do open the scene with them praying at 5 a.m. And then we skip to 12 hours later where Bilal's working the grill, making some barbecue for iftar, which is when you break your fast at sundown. And then Shaida's in the room working on the sauce because they've invited Bilal's family over for the first iftar that they're all sharing. So it's going to be her mom, his mom, his brother, his sister. So the whole family's coming through. And this is not important, but he took one smell of the sauce and implied that, you know, I would probably put some other sauce on it. Hated that. That was very uncomfortable for me.
Make sure you season this. Like, sir, you haven't tasted it. And like, I know that he cannot at this moment, but like, I'm sure she'll be fine. I'm sure she's good.
Listen, I'm fasting. I will eat. Okay. The sauce will be eaten. And if it's unseasoned, I can, you know, I'll throw some pepper on that. I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And it's barbecue. It's barbecued. The chickens would barbecue. It's going to taste good regardless.
It's a lot easier to add a few more spices at the end than to accidentally overspice and not be able to figure that out because
you or it, so. Make a whole new sauce.
Yeah. So maybe we just wait. Trust her anyway, on this one.
Unnecessary ribbing from Bilal there, but we move. So we go to the iftar and, you know, this is where we saw on the next time on that Shaida brings up, you know, maybe having a little family. And he's like, no, we have family. It's like, well, we have family at home. We don't need this family. We have family at home. And we find out that Bilal's sister had a child at 43. And of course, you know exactly where this is going to go, listeners. Bilal's like, oh, 43. And how old are you? You're 37. That's a clean 6 years you got. So he says that. And this is where I believe Shaida was like, oh, hell no. Like, you are not going to just be like, this is a one for one. She had a baby at 43 means we can have a baby at 43. We have time. And, you know, he does say that for him, 2 or 3 years from now is when he imagines it, before 40, but still 2 or 3 years, which I think Shaida not only correctly realizes that, yeah, he's definitely going to try and push it to as close to 40 as possible for like, because that's what they put in their prenup. But also she realizes, I want to get some other opinions. I need to talk to his mom and sister, and I need to tell them what we heard. I don't really want to share all my information, but at the same time, I feel like they need to know what's happening because they're hearing all these comments, and I can't not say anything.
See, for most people, I would think hearing Shaida is even further progressed in terms of the viability of her eggs than they would have expected necessarily. And there's only a 5% chance every cycle once she turns 40 as an estimate. And you would think that that would make matters more pressing, where I feel like we'll all kind of heard, oh, so I'm running out that clock even faster than I thought I was. And I feel like Bull does not want a child. It seems like pretty obvious to me at this point.
Or at least right now, he is not mentally there.
Like, I just don't believe, like, man's not dumb. I don't think that he walks away from that meeting and hears like, this is pretty pressing. Like, you really need to like actually start talking about this and like trying consistently. And if it doesn't happen for 6 months, we need to explore other issues. And then Bilal, then, you know, not even a week later, whatever it was, saying, oh, we got 6 years.
Yeah, just, you know,
I don't believe it.
6 years. Yeah. I mean, to me, I feel like this is a case where, you know, I'll use myself as an example. So when I was planning on moving here, we had laid out a plan. It was going to be at the end of April. Liana was going to, was it end of April, end of March? I forget at this point. Some of the information is muddy. Basically, I had more time to pack my stuff, say my goodbyes, you know, and go out a little bit more of on my own pace to move. But then the pandemic happened, or was on the brink of happening, and the borders were on the brink of shutting down, and I had to skip everything and push to 3 days, pack everything in 3 days, find a place to store myself within 3 days, buy my plane ticket, get everything ready, and leave the country before the border shut down. So this is as if I knew all that and I said, well, we agreed on this date, so I'm still going to focus on what we said then. Things change. New factors, new information comes in, and you have to adapt and evolve to that mindset. So for me, you can keep trying to delay the inevitable of Shaida still wants children, but also the percentage going down like that, the percentage being 5% in a mere 2 years does accelerate that timetable quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So if you're not ready, that is completely fine. Again, I still feel like Bilal, if he's not ready, that's fine. He should be honest with her, though. He should be honest and not avoid the topic, because what he's doing is he's putting her in an impossible spot where she has all these feelings about all this, but she has nowhere to go with them and nothing to say because he keeps trying to not have that conversation, which is not okay. It's not healthy.
Mm-hmm. I think it really comes down to, like you said, like, it's fine if he does not feel ready to have a child and does not want to. Like, that's his prerogative, but the conversation should be had at this point. And if she wants to, and he allegedly wants to in the future, like, they already brought up the possibility of freezing eggs. Maybe we look at going ahead and doing that electively now rather than waiting and it being a lower chance of viability in the future.
Right. I feel like, I feel like there should be a little bit more urgency at the very least in the conversation. Like, you don't have to try for baby tonight, but you can at least start putting contingency plans and thoughts into the future now. Mm-hmm. Putting them on hold is just not going to do anyone any favors. So clearly the lack of conversation pushes Shahida to then have that conversation with his family. So namely his mom and sister. And she explains, you know, the chances are 5%. And I believe it was his mom who even clarified, he was there with you when the doctor said that? Yes. Yes, he was. And then, you know, they don't know the full story. They don't know the full, they haven't talked to Bilal about any of this. So then they said that, you know, well, he's not saying that he doesn't want kids, right? He hasn't said that. To which she says, he's not saying that, but the actions show that. And I feel like I'm glad she said that, because we've been seeing that the actions don't show that over two seasons of the show in the last 5 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think the mom even knows what we just said. Because if he was there, he would surely understand that this seems pretty pressing. So surely he wasn't there, right? Oh, no, he was there. Oh, okay. And Bilal has money. It's not as if we are like pressed for money and can't explore other options in terms of making sure that this has the best possible chance in the future. I don't know. He seems so resistant to giving them any kind of better chance that it makes me really question him coming around on it at all.
Yeah. I feel like every week I'm just talking more about my skepticism on this. And it's because every week I'm hoping that the week after is when they will have that talk and we'll get some more at least clarifying comments or moments. Even his mom at the end of this episode has a confessional where she says that these two need to have this conversation because this could be something that could be a make or break in the relationship, which it 100% will. Shahida does end the episode by saying, you know, either we have this conversation now or there just won't be a chance to have this conversation ever, which I completely agree with. In the next time on, psych, they don't have a next time on. So they're just delaying this for another week. I don't think we're going to get our answers the week after. So be ready. You can just replay this clip for the next three episodes with them, because I truly don't think it's going to move anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's 0% surprising. Seems exactly on brand.
Exactly. So now let us take one last break. And then we'll come back and talk about Angela and Michael and Jovi and Yara. Alrighty, not to compare two trash people, but Angela and Michael, I said the same thing about like I did with Big Ed and Liz, and theirs was even worse than Big Ed and Liz. So we're going to treat it the same way, try and get through it as quickly as possible here. So with Angela and Michael, they were at the club/bar place they were meeting up to have their conversation. They're still there. The conversation will be had. So he finally convinces her to sit down and have a conversation with him and essentially talks about how he feels like, you know, the reason he's doing this, the reason he's doing the Instagram thing, he can get some influencer points and, you know, make some money because that would be good. And if you thought that this would be a moment where Angela says, oh, that makes sense, so you're not cheating on me or scamming me, that's good to know. Nope, that doesn't happen. That does not happen at all. Even when he, you know, he believes that they've both made mistakes. So when Michael has a confessional before they sit down, he's like, I think we both made mistakes. But I also think that there's only one side of the story that's been heard, and that's hers. My side has not been heard. So when he says that he's doing it for the money, she loses her mind. She kicks the table. She calls him bitch like three different times. She gets up and stares him down. When I tell you that anyone else would have been pulled from the show at this point and they wouldn't have shown this, she should not be on the show, Scally. She simply should not be on the show after this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no interest in watching Angela. I don't get it. I don't get the appeal. It's been the same note for 9 episodes now, and I haven't been interested in it for any of them. The only halfway interesting line she had, where it's like, and this would be interesting if it was like coming from anywhere else, but like she's like, well, I know he's not making any money on social media because he's not interesting and he has no charisma. It's like, why are you with this person? Like, how did we get here? I don't understand it. I really don't have any interest in watching them. I feel like even through this season, I haven't gotten to know Michael at all. I couldn't tell you a single thing about him, except that Angela is just like absolutely losing her mind over seemingly nothing.
Over, I mean, he said exactly what he was doing with having an Instagram, and she still had a confessional where she's like, I don't know. He's not letting me see his phone. So, like, you know, how am I supposed to know? I think he's still scamming. I think he could be cheating on me. I think there's women on his phone. All this other nonsense, which, again, you're saying you don't see the appeal of them. And I fully get it watching this season. Their first season, they were one of my favorite couples. She was messy, but he was funny in a very stupid way, but he was funny. So I enjoyed watching them when it was a bit of a train wreck before it got real. And then the last couple of seasons, it's just gotten real. And it's been, and I feel like she's pushed the envelope more and more every time with the hypocrisy, with making other people uncomfortable, with putting it all on him when he's not done anything. So all of that, okay, he asks, well, why can't you trust me? And she says, because you don't give me a reason to trust you. She does say the charisma stuff about him having an Instagram. Michael, bless his heart, he really meant it at the start of the season when he said that he wants to be in a relationship where he has equal say and he's tired of not saying anything to her. After all of this that we just described happened, he still said, I feel like you sound selfish. This sounds selfish to me. And then he brings up, because I've seen you on TikTok duetting this other guy and doing content with him. So what's that about? And she fully blames it on him. She essentially says that she did it to make him jealous. And that is not okay to me. You're trying to make him jealous and you would have stopped if he said something. That's ridiculous to me.
I also just don't believe it's true.
Like, yeah.
I think she's doing this regardless. I mean, like, go take a look at Angela's Instagram now. I'm sure that it's still going on, whether it's with him or someone else. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all. So I don't know. I just don't believe it. I think that are we probably even due to have that guy make a comeback at some point this season? But
who knows at this point? We just haven't seen him since that first episode.
Yeah. Could not tell you what's going on there, but I just feel like this is a couple I see no appeal in. Hearing that they were at one point one of a favorite is shocking. I don't know what we're getting here.
No, this river has run dry as far as fun or interesting or intriguing content. It's just uncomfortable. She gives them the ultimatum of you have till the morning. You either delete that Instagram or we're done. Oh, she also drops the bombshell here that, hey, by the way, there's an update on your visa. It could be arriving soon, but I talked to the lawyer and I might pull it, whatever. So this is the first time he's getting an update here. And he says to us that he finds the ultimatum to be sickening and that he's sick of being a silent partner. He wants to have equal say in this relationship. He's tired of it. I think he has finally come to terms of, if she doesn't approve or budge on this, then maybe it's not meant to be, which is essentially what he says in the next time on. So will she compromise? I don't feel like she will, but the one bit of almost glimmer of hope that I saw in the next time on was that Renee, Angela's friend who came with her, is kind of siding with Michael on this.
Look at Renee when I tried to give her MVP of the last episode and you yelled at me. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this can actually play out. I don't know. I don't see Angela going down easy. So I think it's going to be a fight regardless.
For sure. I mean, again, this is the same person who was very much argumentative about them getting married, argumentative about him doing anything. If Michael doesn't do exactly what she says, it's not fair. She has gone and tried to get his device hacked so she could see what's going on his phone. She has pulled up to his home country on a sneak attack on a hunch that maybe he's doing some shady stuff because he blocked me on Instagram. Not taking the time to self-reflect on, oh, it's because I'm going to give him a hard time regardless. So that's probably why. Anyway, that's about as much as time we have for Michael and Angela.
I do love that the threat is, if you're not careful, you won't get to live with me and be married to me full time. Like, ooh, that seems like such the opposite direction of a threat that you would expect. Living and being married to Angela, truly just like, again, the exact opposite a direction you would think the threat would go.
Yeah. So you're telling me that if I don't listen to you, then you will leave me alone forever. Kind of sounds appealing.
So I get to keep my Instagram and I lose you. That sounds good.
Looking good right about now. I'll tell you that much.
I see no downside. This is a win-win.
Exactly. All right, Scally, we have one more couple to talk about here. They got the bulk of the episode. They were actually, I think, the primary couple in this episode. And that is Jovi and Yara. So Jovi and Yara, the last time we had seen them, he was about to go off to work and she was battling with the thought of, am I going to go to Europe without him or am I going to wait? Because he basically begged her to wait until he gets there because he said stuff along the lines of, she's not going to think rationally. She's going to be irrational. She needs me there. I need to be able to help out when she goes to Europe.
Oh yeah, so. Big help Jovi is. Like I need Jovi to sleep on the plane and ignore me as I fly with my toddler. Seems like the most helpful person that could ever be there.
Yeah, pretty audacious this man is. He's had many moments this episode which had me feeling some type of way. The first one being, like you mentioned, he slept on the plane while Yara took care of Mila the entire way there. Okay. The second part, and this happened first, on the way to the airport, we of course learned that Yara hasn't seen her mom in 2.5 years, and she's excited to see her mom. Now, Jovi in the car, his mom, Gwen, is asking some questions on the ride and says, you know, Jovi, have you picked up any of the language? Are you going to be able to have a conversation? He says, da, to which she replies, that's Russian. That's not even the language, but good try. Gwen's like, well, what about if you want to talk to her mom? Like, what are you going to do? He replies, and I'm quoting, I'm not mincing any words. This is a literal quote from Jovi's mouth. If her mom wants to communicate with me, she can speak English.
Yeah, divorce. just like done. Like I would break my neck from snapping it around so fast. I lost my mind. Again, I feel like with this being my first season with Jovi and Yara, at least watching them, I've listened to you talk about them before, but I feel like I was sold like the slightest bill of goods with Jovi in the early season and has just revealed himself to be a complete ass in the last couple episodes, especially.
Yeah, it's only gotten worse. At one point, it was like, yeah, Jovi's a bit, he's delusional and he's annoying, but he's kind of crossed that territory to just being awful, like plain awful. And it's not even I don't like him. It's more of a, yeah, no, this is some awful behavior. Because again, you married someone and you have no interest in learning anything about her family or her side or her language. Which the bar is so low when it comes to the American counterparts learning the language of their loved one on the show. So that when someone like, what's his name, Patrick last season knew and could speak to Thais's father, I was like, I'm proud of you. This is awesome that you know that. This is awesome that you've learned that. But no,
he not only didn't learn, but he's like, if she wants to communicate with me, she can learn English. She can speak English. That's fine by me. That's it. So that happened. And then they flew. They got to Czech Republic. Yara is so happy. And the scene where Yara greets her mom was so, so amazing. It was heartwarming. And I'm so happy that she was able to be reunited with her mom.
Yeah, this is cute. I really liked this moment to get to see Yara and her mom reunited. And then Yara's mom meeting Mila for the first time. Very, very cute. Obviously, Jovi was kind of irrelevant in the scene. As I wish he was more.
Yeah, I would have loved for that to happen. But obviously, Jovi's going to make it about Jovi real quick. So they're on the car ride back to the hotel or to her place, I assume hotel. And they are, you know, Jovi's the one driving. And initially, he doesn't even clock that he has to remove the parking brake. So that happens. And then we move into a scene where it's the two of them in confessional. And, you know, strike two for Jovi. Jovi's like, when did you get your driver's license? Yara's like, I got it recently. He's like, yeah, so you're not a better driver than me. You cannot tell me how to drive at all. I will not listen to that. Okay. Yeah. Sounds like someone's ego's wrapped around being the better driver.
So whether we are in the US or in Europe, I don't want to hear it. But I was like, okay, head snap number two for me. I just, Jovi's on one this episode.
Yeah, which honestly, like, I understand, people not being able, like, some people can't handle, like, backseat driving or someone being very critical. I didn't think she said anything too bad here. I think she just said, it's the parking brake. And then she commented on, have you ever driven in Europe? To which he said, no. I don't think she was being malicious in any way.
Yeah, not at all. I just think Jovi has the ego and like this was always going to be that he'd find something wrong regardless.
Yeah, which then in the they start talking and this happens here and later at the place they were at. Yara's talking with her mom and Jovi doesn't know the language. And every now and then he hears his name being mentioned. So he's getting very upset that, you know, his name is being mentioned, but he doesn't know what's being said, which I'll give him this. If you're in a situation where there is a language barrier and someone's talking about you, that's never a great spot to be in. But also you've made no effort in trying to learn the language. So it's a little bit on you in this instance, especially, you know, when it's with her mother, like who she hasn't seen in 2.5 years. Of course, they're going to talk. And of course, your name's going to come up because you are her husband. And you've been like together the last 2.5 years. So to assume that it's malicious, I don't love. I get the frustration a tad, but I don't love.
I wanted Yara so badly to just snap back like, well, if you want to understand what we're saying, you can learn Ukrainian. Like, go ahead, go learn, because you didn't seem that interested in communicating with us before. So I don't know, just like the nerve.
Big nerve. Yeah. Anyway, so then, immediately upon being here, Yara is starting to feel like this is amazing. This is I love it here. I would like to stay longer, maybe. And you know, her mom is asking her some questions about whether or not she would love to live here potentially. You know, that's like an option they can have. And this all culminated from Yara's mom being very willing to just babysit Mila. And you know, whatever it takes, she's down to do it. And Jovi's throwing some quips of, yeah, because the whole thing was Jovi asked if she'd be okay with looking after Mila and for like a whole day and like they go have a day out or whatever, which she agreed to. Then Jovi was like, yeah, ask your mom if she would like to be a full-time babysitter with us in the States.
I feel like just like a very presumptuous question, regardless of like the hoops that she would then have to jump through to do that. Because we've seen Jovi even before that being like, what am I going to take care of her whole family? They live with us? Like, no. So I don't know what he thinks she would be doing even if she did come over. But Jovi is just super frustrating, just like expecting people to do everything for him. And I feel like this is yet another example.
Right. I feel like you said what he's thinking. I don't think he does. I really don't. I think he's going off vibes. Most of the time, I don't think there's a lot of through line of thinking ahead with him, because in the next scene we see he's met up with one of his friends who he, you know, had met back in the day and they, you know, used to travel Europe together. and, you know, go drinking, bar hopping, clubbing, all that sorts. So that friend lives in Germany, I believe, and is here in Prague already, day one, ready to hang out. Which, sir, you made your own plans already?
Yeah. This was weird. I don't know how this happens, but I actually would bet this is the scene that was cut out on Discovery Plus. It feels a little extraneous, but yeah, Jovi is now getting worried that Yara wants to potentially stay in Europe, and he wants to remind her what they agreed on. They agreed that they would live in the U.S. and
you signed up for this life.
To that. I was like, oh my God. Did she, like, was that the full agreement? But I don't know.
I feel like there's just a complete lack of empathy from Jovi, you know? And I think that's my biggest issue, is that he doesn't understand that she's been away from everything she knows for near 3 years now. So of course, when she's back, she's going to feel that attachment. She's going to want to, like, spend time here. She's going to, it's all the familiar feelings are coming back. Also, I'm looking at the clips real quick. I think you're 100% right. I think that's the clip that was not on Discovery Plus, because the manicure clip is 100% here. But this isn't. So I think you nailed it on the head here. It just really didn't make sense. Also, why is TLC putting two versions of the show out? That makes no sense to me. How are we getting a different version than Discovery Plus? How is the Discovery Plus version not the longer version?
That's what feels weird to me, is you would think they would get the bonus scenes, but no. Like, oh, you want to pay for this specifically? You get less. You get less content.
I need to put a post in the Reddit and see if other people have noticed this and if anyone has a clear answer of why that's happening, because it's infinitely confusing to me.
Mm-hmm. I would be curious. I would definitely be curious to hear, but like you said, like, the man lacks empathy, but at the same time, when Yara's like, my friends and family are currently living in a war-torn country, and he's like, oh, where would they live here? It's like, oh, wow, that man lacks empathy. I'm shocked. Like, I am floored.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know where they would stay, because, like, you know, we have a two-bedroom, but are they all going to be okay with sleeping in one room? Because I don't want them in my room. I was like, sir, it's a war-torn country. I'm sure they'd be okay sleeping in one room, because it's better than being in a war-torn country right now. Like, you are, oh, not today, Scally. Yeah. We're not doing this. I can't. So ultimately, he was asked by his friend, if Yara asked you to move to Europe, would you? He says, no. He also says, he does point out rightfully that there's, you know, with the green card that she has to spend at least 6 months, half the year in the States. So he doesn't know how long she wants to be here, because that long term is not possible, which is fair, completely fair. In the next time on, Yara does tell him that she has made plans with her mom to go looking at some apartments here with her mom. So he gets so insulted because she's doing this behind my back. She told you before she went.
How frequently is Jovi off at work? Because
I think it's like 1 month on, 1 month off.
All right. So that sounds like 6 months a year. So it seems like Yara could live in the U.S. for 6 months out of the year pretty consistently and still see Jovi and still maintain her green card status. So I think we have a plan here.
It sounds doable. Sounds doable to me. But that's the thing, is that I feel like he has this vision of how their life should be in his head, and he believes that she agreed to it all. Again, similarly to the previous back to my example of, yeah, I thought I was leaving a month later than I actually ended up leaving, but because we agreed on it, that's the life we have. There's no adaptability with him. And, you know, why would there be? Why, Scally, he gets to go to work 1 month on, 1 month off. When he comes home, he gets, first of all, for those months that he's not there, his baby's being raised by his wife. So he doesn't have to change diapers. He doesn't have to do anything. Pretty cushy. He comes home, those 3 weeks that he's back home, at least one of them, he's just chilling because he earned it from working. And then the other two, he has to do some semblance of house stuff, but then he gets mad if she goes out with friends. He gets mad if she does extra stuff. And also, she didn't really have the help of his mom, Gwen, for like, what, 6 months, because they had a disagreement. But that's not on his neck. That's on hers, because he gets to leave, what, 3 months out of six, per, like, right? So why would he want it to change? Sounds like he got the better end of the deal from where I'm standing. So, of course, he thinks that what they agreed to is what they agreed to, and that's that. But the moment something is proposed that doesn't go to what he wants, my God, is this guy intolerable.
Mm-hmm. Even when he gets what he wants, pretty intolerable sometimes.
Intolerable.
Yeah. But, you know, things are not always going his way in this little batch of episodes. And I think that, and even worse, Jovi has definitely been showing its face. Nervous for, you know, like you said, the next time on where Yara is looking for an apartment and he is caught off guard. But I don't know. I'm hopeful she at least can escape to Europe and see her family on a decently regular basis.
The fingers are crossed. So we'll see. We'll see. But that does bring us to the end of the episode, Scally. And I can't thank you enough for, you know, coming on and talking through this with me. If you don't know already, audience, Scally and I, we're recording late night. We do this. So I appreciate you for taking time out of your sleep time to hang out with me here.
Of course, of course. For no one else, but had to be here. Love talking about 90 Day Fiance. Always a fun one. I always say that I am thankful, but also curse you for getting me addicted to the show at times. So, yeah, it's been fun.
I would I appreciate hearing that, Scally. And to that, I do say, watching this show, it is pretty therapeutic to have the vent sesh weekly. So I'm glad we got to do this time together here.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah. Well, let the people know, where can they find you? What other stuff you have going on and all sorts?
So what do I have going on? I'm talking about the challenge every week over on the Dom and Colin podcast feed. Couple episodes in already on this season, but it's been definitely super interesting. I'm curious to see where the rest of the season goes. So check that out. Otherwise, anything I'm doing will be on Twitter at Brian_Scally. I'll be popping up here and there, but I'll talk about it over on Twitter when I know what those things are.
Sounds good. Once again, Scally, thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you.
Y'all can find me on Twitter at Puyaism, of course. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Puya. I have had a bunch of fun this past week trying some different content. Terrified myself by playing a scary game. Participated in a tournament for 3 different games in one sitting. 8 hours of fun right then and there. So if you are around, check those out. Would appreciate it. Come through, say hi. Do that weekly. Thank you very much. 90 Day Fiance is done here, but then also I have Masked Singer going on right now. Masked Singer took a hiatus for a week, so we didn't get that episode, and then they did that last week. So we talked about the episode 4 with Liana last week. It was a lot of fun. Check that out. And last but not least, Love is Blind currently out there and happening. And luckily for you, we do have a wrap up for that. Every week, we will be getting some coverage here from the batch of episodes that Netflix releases, hosted by Mary and Asia over on the Love is Blind wrap up. So definitely go check that out on this very network if you would like. And also, please leave a rating and review for this podcast. It helps people find the podcast. It gives me much needed feedback on what is working, what may not be working, and everything in between. You can do so over on robiswebsite.com/90dayfiance. That's number 9, number 0, Day Fiance. But for now, we have arrived at the destination here on the Hot Mess Express. We thank you for listening. We hope you have a great week. And we'll catch you for episode 10 next week. But until then, take care. Have a good one. Bye.